if all you know is the tactile alphabet, of course, that's what you're going to use, even though the person you're signing to may know fluent ASL or American Sign Language. And so the person may prefer to have ASL sign, but they would have to go letter by letter if that's what the signer knows.
What I was thinking of, like in regular Braille, there's contractions, kind of like for shortcuts of words, and does sign have the same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Not
exactly, but it's...
Well, not for specific combinations of letters, you know, like there's no M-E-N-T, but you know, there may be one sign for an entire word, you know. So ASL, American Sign Language, is just that. You know, there's not contraction, but there are signs for specific words.
Like abbreviations for specific words.
Right. And that's what the manual is that I'm putting together.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it's like there'll be one word for regarding, for example, you know, for one sign, one fluid sign, rather than spelling it all out.
Sure.
And like, this is Barbara, but like, you know, there are things like, you know, like book is like opening your hands sort of,
right,
like a book. Some of them are very connected to what people do all the time.
Sure, yeah. Very often the sign will make sense. Like if you move your hand up and down in front of your mouth, that'll be like brushing your teeth, you know? That's what it means. You know, so very often, sign mimics life, you know, and so there's often, and there's a lot of universally understood sign in American Sign Language, you know.
But if you're blind, you aren't going to see somebody move their finger up and down in front of their mouth.
No,
so
that's why you need tactile sign language is what a lot of people will use. Sign language or finger spelling.
Well, we didn't mean to altogether interrupt the rest of your report, Cheryl.
I did have something else. This is probably to further answer Dorothy's question. As far as services, I do want to have it understood that Cheryl's position is very much a statewide position, in that she is the person that our staff contacts in the event, you know, in those situations where they're working with a person with a dual sensory loss and they need Cheryl's expertise. You know, what kinds of considerations need to be taken into account? I think one shining example of that is a person who is deafblind in Western Nebraska, who had a very sheltered life up until his mid-40s, at which point his parents died. He had been living with his parents this whole time, and now it's creating a situation where his options are fairly limited, and so Cheryl was brought into that situation. And I think that has been very helpful to the staff working through that that situation. So Cheryl's expertise is very important to providing the kind of support that our staff need, especially in those situations that we don't always see that often, but are definitely needed, you know, in terms of advice and guidance. So, and another service that's important too is the deafblind service, the deafblind group that Cheryl works with here in Omaha. Maybe Cheryl, you could talk a little bit more about the hand-in-hand support group.
Hand-in-hand
It, oh, how do I want to say it? Part of the VIP network. They were started in the 90s for individuals with a doula, for social purposes, and also to learn and have a chance to do peer interaction on, like I was saying, okay, I lost my train of thought.
So the group meets how often?
Every other month, and to find out when and where, you can contact me about that, and then I can let you know when it, I also send it out when the group is meeting or where. Their next meeting will be here on December 11th, and they're having a holiday potluck from 10 to noon. So that's kind of what the plan for Hand in Hand is. I also want to go back and address the other focus items. We have two more left. And the next one is the Nebraska for Hearing Aid Coverage. That is a new group of individuals. The grassroots movement started by the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. And I asked to be part of that because we have a lot of individuals who have a dual law and need a hearing aid, but cannot really afford one. Now, this is not to take the place of the Lion or Sotoma Club or Hearing Aid Bank or any other service that could be out there to help people to afford a hearing aid. This is for individuals who may have a job but do not have the insurance or adequate insurance or resources to purchase the hearing aid. Even though Medicaid can help in some situations, you don't always get the right hearing aid that's needed through Medicaid. Because they have a certain one that they'll pay, this is what we'll pay for. But they don't pay for the testing or the audiology testing, the batteries, the ear mold, or anything like that. So what we find is that people do need to be able to have access to what other hearing aids are out there and have some kind of support that would help them financially, or credit through tax so that they don't have to end up taking a chunk of that out of their pocket. And what it is, it's a grassroots movement that it comprises of individuals and groups representing different people with hearing loss. And the goal is the adoption of a law that will alleviate the enormous financial burden for individuals and families in purchasing a hearing aid. Again, that group just started a couple of months ago. So right now we're in the process of identifying what the needs are or who could use this, family, for children, individuals who work but cannot go out and afford a hearing aid. This is what's happening. And this is where statistics like this will come in handy too, the statistics that we got from Helen Keller.
Nancy's signing something to her.
Nancy was reminding me of the range of cost of hearing aids. It depends on what kind of hearing aid a person needs. For example, a hearing aid can start off from $1,300 and up, depending on, you know, what you need. Now, most people need two hearing aids. So you're looking at $1,300 for one hearing aid. Imagine trying to pay for two hearing aids. This is where the cost becomes prohibitive. Even with insurance, if a person has insurance probably only is going to pay a minimum of that. So this is where people are, and one lady on the committee was there, she said, you know, a lot of people are buying computers. And so I need to save my money to buy a hearing aid because of, you know, the cost. A lot of people, they have new technology that's now called analog hearing aids, which I don't have one, but they say that it's to help people hear better. But also some people are now using a hearing aid in conjunction with the cochlear implant. So there's all kinds of things. Now this is not for cochlear implants, it's only for hearing aids.
this is what the group is looking for. And interestingly enough, cochlear implants, even though they've been around for at least 20 years, a lot of insurance will pay for cochlear implants, but they won't pay for hearing aids. And when you ask why, they say because when you think about, especially our population aging, everybody will come back and say, I need a hearing aid, I need help with hearing aid. Well, the population that's getting cochlear implants right now is still low enough that insurance are looking at that. But even with that, the person with the cochlear implant has to have it maintained on a yearly basis. And once abrasion, things like that, the person has to pay for going to back to the doctor, having adjustments made. A lot of that comes out of their own pocket. And so if you were looking at that whole picture, the hearing aid is probably going to be cheaper. But then again, that's the individual need. Some people can't use the hearing aid, and cochlear implant works better. But for those who can use the hearing aid and they can't afford it, they go without. And you'd be surprised how many people will not or do not wear hearing aids because they can't afford it. I have had mine since 1976, and if it goes out to me tomorrow, I'm up a creek. So this is why I'd like to see this passed. Because if this becomes a bill and a pass, that means hopefully I can get $500 credit through taxes for that. And I won't be trying to take out $1,304 or whatever for out of my own pocket.
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
This is Dorothy Weston Yankee. And what I wanted to say, I have hearing loss in my right ear. Dr. Harker at Boys Town Institute tells me that insurance companies will not pay for cochlear implants, and also when I get a hearing aid, insurances won't pay for hearing aids also. Is that necessarily true?
Okay, I don't know about the particular insurance for cochlear implants, okay? But I can tell you that the Nebraska Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing and the Lions Hearing Aid Bank and the Trauma Hearing Aid Club, they take reconditioned hearing aids. Like for example, if a person has a hearing aid they no longer need, they turn it into the Trauma Club or Lions Hearing Aid Bank, and they have it reconditioned for people who have lower income and who have this need because they can't afford it. To find out more about that, you need to contact the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing, and they can take an application and process that and let you know, because they also look at income, resources, and all that. Also, if a person is a veteran, okay, they may be able to qualify for a hearing aid through the veteran services, depending on what their discharge was, and also they need to have their DD-214. Form, the discharge form, all that has to be in order. The Teachers Guild of Nebraska, I emailed some information out on that last week where some people, if they qualify, they may be able to get a loan through a bank. I don't remember what bank that was, but if you want more information on that, I can share. Again, that's a loan process through a bank where you pay, but it's more of a low interest loan to have people with like hearing aids, computers, and things like that. But it depends on what the need is and if they qualify. Not everybody qualifies for that.
I was just gonna add to Dorothy's question. There are some insurance companies, but most insurance companies aren't paying for cochlear implants. But Medicare, we've had a couple of clients because they're on Medicare, and because they have such a significant hearing loss and vision loss, Medicare has approved that and paid it. But they also had to pay their 20%, and they'll have to maintain it beyond that. But you're right, Dorothy, there isn't a lot. You know, it's hard for people to learn that they have a hearing loss, but they have no resource to be able to get the tools they need to be able to handle their hearing loss. And so that's been a frustrating situation. So one of the things that Cheryl has been doing is working hard on this committee and working very, very closely with Boys Town, and that's what came from this week, her presentation, really opening the door to that working relationship too.
This is Bob. Another important resource, at least here in Nebraska, is Medicaid. Medicaid will cover augmentative technology like pocket talkers and hearing aids. You know, at least I think Medicaid will pay for one hearing aid, if not two. Of course, that Medicaid is income dependent.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Nebraska is really only one of two states nationally that will cover hearing aids. But that is another important resource to people with low income.
Mm. I know Dr. Harkin told me it cost $25,000 just for the instrument part of the, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, the cochlear implant.
Mm-hmm.
And then the surgery would be something even more. So I can imagine it'd be $35,000-$40,000.
Mm. Wow.
This is Bob. It's very expensive, and the end result is not at all certain. Some people benefit a great deal by that. Other people have had less remarkable success.
Yeah.
Hubert, how are we doing on time?
Got about 7 minutes.
7 minutes. And I know you have at least one more topic you want to talk about.
Okay, yeah, thank you, Ben. Okay, the last thing is the equipment distribution program. And what that is, Nebraska is one of the few states that have this program through the Nebraska Public Service Commission. What it is that any individual in the state of Nebraska who had a verifiable hearing loss, and it can also be hearing and vision loss together, they can apply for assistance to get equipment to help them to hear on the phone or to hear a phone, like an amplified phone, Braille, TTY. They have a new TTY that's coming out called CompTel. That is where if a person has understandable speech, they can call anyone and the operator, well, you don't have to go through the relay operator. The operator is already all that set up through CapTel, and it all is communication back and forth through TTY. And you don't have to, but you're using your own voice to communicate with the other person. That's just one thing, or maybe a person needs a flashing light or a pager to let them know if the phone is ringing, amplified phone, or large display button to do to use the phone. Anything connected with phone or to hear on the phone, this is what this program is for. Okay, if a person says, well, I need to have a phone that's amplified, or I need to be able to hear the phone when it's ringing and things like that, there are several vendors throughout the nation in the state that sell these. But what happens is, first of all, the person has to fill out an application, or in this case, if we have individuals with a dual loss, our staff can fill out the application and submit it to me, and I can approve the application for the phone device that's needed, or TTY or whatever. Then it's sent to the Public Service Commission. They then send a person what's called a voucher. No money exchange hands at any time. It's a voucher saying, okay, you're accepted for whatever the device is. Then it's the person's responsibility to go to a vendor of their choice with that voucher. Some vendors are not local. They have to send in to a national company to get whatever the product is. And I have a list of those vendors, so it's not like the person could get left out. The person does get a copy of that. Then once they send in the voucher to the vendor, or give it to the vendor. The vendor then sends them the equipment. Now, this is what's important. If the person needs to have the equipment hooked up or whatever, it's the vendor's responsibility to hook it up. But the person has to ask the vendor, otherwise they won't get that service.
Yeah.
There have been several times when I've had calls from people saying, well, I got the TQI and I don't know how to use it. And they didn't know that they needed to ask the vendor. So any time, if you have someone who has equipment from through this program, they need to ask the vendor to hook it up. Because I don't know how to hook up all this equipment. Some of it is pretty new to me. So,
I was just gonna add that previous to this, the Nebraska Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing was the one, the agency that usually approved all the equipment. And we met, and now Cheryl handles all of the requests with individuals with dual sensory loss because she's been working closely with making those recommendations for equipment.
I don't make recommendations.
I meant with the client. She helps coordinate, I didn't say it right, but she helps them coordinate that, exposes them to the different phones that are available. She talks to them about the large print and make sure they have a chance that they're talking about it, they think it might work, have a chance to see the large print display for the TQI, talk about all the different options so that they can make an informed choice, and from there, help with that paperwork. She and Dan Johnson, the support staff, redid the form so it's in large print so individuals can access that form for themselves and, you know, from a self-advocacy standpoint.
I also want to add, thank you, Nancy. I want to add too that we don't have this equipment in our office to display to show people. But if people want to try out this equipment or to get an idea if it's going to work for them, both in the Nebraska Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing in Omaha and Lincoln have display equipment that the person can go and actually try it out and see. Because I've had many times when people say, oh, maybe an amplified phone will help me. So if they go and they try it out, sometimes they find out, oh, no, it didn't work. This way, the person's not getting equipment that's not going to work for them. Because with the equipment distribution program, if a person gets equipment, it's supposed to last them for at least 5 years before they can apply for something else. Unless, let's say that a person has a visual TTY, and then say a year down the road, their vision has gotten to the point where now they need to use a braille TTY, they can look at opening up the case for a new application. But that is every 5 years.
Do they also have the braille one there on display for people to look at?
No, but if you have someone that would like to see the braille TTY, maybe I can find someone that would be willing as a peer to show that there and how it works.
Okay.
This is Nancy. The cost of that display is around $6,000, and there are several people here in the Omaha area that I know are using that and are very open to sharing not only about their jobs, the equipment that they're doing, etc. You're beeping.
I believe that's our time. Timer going off.
Can I make one comment, Barb?
Okay.
Nancy Ford, are you signing for Cheryl?
Yes, I am. Because she can't hear you when you guys ask questions, so she has just been voicing for herself, and then when you have asked questions, I have just signed back to her. And no, I'm not a certified interpreter, but she was offered one.
Okay, I guess what I wanted to say, I didn't know you could do that, and I'm impressed.
Oh, okay. I just wanted everyone to know it now that we were talking about the law. I'm not a certified interpreter. And she said, I didn't know that I could do that. And I said, I'm sometimes surprised that I can do that myself. But Cheryl's very patient, and if I fingerspell a word, she shows me the sign.
We're very lucky to have Nancy
yes.
on staff.
Definitely.
Anyway, also as her interpreter, I forgot to wear black today, so I put my coat on over my pink blouse.
You're giving the time. Thank you for letting me have this opportunity to share with you. And
thank you very much, Cheryl. We really appreciate learning more about this important service. One question I have, which I don't know if it goes in the budget time or when, but I'm wondering if we have made arrangements or been able to look ahead to continue to fund the position at the point at which I know that the Helen Keller funding went down each year and is about to go completely. So what are we doing?
This is Pearl, yes. Actually, because of the way the Helen Keller support is provided, it helps to ensure continuation, because each year they do less of a portion and the agency is required to provide more of a portion of the cost of the staff person and other related costs. And so we have just basically built that into our budget plan expenditures in terms of our responsibility for the salary of the deafblind coordinator, as well as the related expenses that go with that. And so it's now, you would say, just part of our operations. It's just in there.
Okay, that's good. Because I think we're fortunate to have the position to begin with, but Cheryl in particular. You know, whenever we've had questions, she's always been willing and able to answer them. And we appreciate the emails we get, not just at the time of the focus topic, but throughout the year, reminding us of what's happening and updating us on the things that are going on with deafblind consumers. Definitely. So we certainly do appreciate that. The next item on the agenda is a 10-minute period for public comment. Does anyone in the public have a comment?
I have a question, Barb.
Yes.
Cheryl, the only interpreter that the commission has, or is there one in Kearney and North Platte and North Fork?
Are you meaning Nancy Flurl, the one who was doing the interpreting?
Cheryl, well, Nancy is not certified, right?
Yeah.
And Cheryl is? You know, the license thing? So is that the only one that the commission has in the state, or is there one in North Fork, Kearney, North Platte, the other offices?
Okay,
you
want me to Pearl? Sure.
I'll speak to that, Howard. I'll try. Cheryl actually is not an interpreter. She's our deafblind coordinator, and she uses sign herself, but she is not a sign language interpreter. The Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired does not have any licensed interpreters on staff. So when we need interpreters, we go through Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing to locate and contract with those people.
Okay. So in a sense, that's Robert. I was gonna say, Howard, she's like Terry Harris, you know, is a coordinator for the Venue program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cheryl's a coordinator for the deafblind program.
Yeah, but we use, you know, when we have deafblind come to our conferences, in our workshop, we use the ones from Omaha here, you know, they come from the Commission for the Blind and Commission of the Hard Hearing.
Yeah.
Deaf and Hard Hearing, yeah.
Okay.
But I was just wondering if the Commission had, you know, signed people, counselors out, you know, like North Platte.
This is Pearl. I do want to mention that many of our staff have taken it upon themselves, and with Cheryl's help, to learn the sign language at least, or print on palm. Some are going further with it, as Cheryl mentioned, and learning sign to be able to communicate on a basic level. Now, that does not mean any of us have, except for, and certainly none of us have the level of expertise you need to actually interpret.
And if you would need one, you know, if you stumbled into someone, you would contact Cheryl.
Yes.
And the Omaha officer.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Is there other comment from the public? I'm not hearing any. Now, at this point, the next item on the agenda is actually a break. We're close enough to lunchtime that I'm wondering if we want to proceed to the next item and then take the break at the time that lunch happens.
That would make sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. The next item is the report from the placement committee, and that item is being handled by Robert Newman, and Hubert, we need another 10 minutes, please.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. So I'm Robert Newman. Anyway, since Dr. Pearl took over the commission, she had wisely, because we all really knew we needed to do it. We have some committees within the commission of commission staff to take care of some issues, some important things that we as a commission need to address. And I think maybe some of the committees were short-lived, but some of them are kind of like standing committees. And one of them is the placement committee. And we've done several things down over the years. Because placement's a very, very important thing for a vocational rehabilitation, commission agency. So one of the things we did, of course, was, try to address some of the things that the staff needed to have training on during either district meetings or statewide meetings. We addressed those kinds of things down through the years to find out what folks needed and find out where we could get it. And then of course, pass that on to Pearl and her administrative staff. And they would actually find the people that we would need to come in and present to us as staff to help us do this job better and stuff. So that just, and then also another thing we did, I think, was go around to staff and make sure that they had all the tools they needed to be able to do their job, which included, hardware stuff like computers and whatever. But another, important tool, of course, are materials, to use as a counselor, as you're working with individuals, clients. A placement manual is something that we've had around for a couple of decades. The first one was put together by one of our former staff, Teresa Leggett. And there were, I'm sure, several people that kind of helped her put that together, but she kind of was the lone person that did that way back when. But again, that was something that needed to be updated. There are a lot of new things that have come out. Of course, there's the internet now that's big as a resource where we can get things too. So we as the president of the committee, we've been working on this for months now, and we're halfway finished with the volume, and there's going to be training taking place in this next month for the staff across the state with the first half of this volume, and we'll have the second half completed in January, and then that will come out and we'll present that to the staff again. And it's going to be available primarily to begin with on disc, a CD, which of course, if you need a hard copy, either Braille or print, they can be at that point produced and then used, handed out, whatever, but it's going to be on CD. And what I've got here is just kind of on my little pack made here, I've got an outline of what the chapters are and what some of the documents are within it. So I'll just kind of quickly run down through those to kind of show you, give you a sample of kind of what we're going to be working with. So let me just, yeah, sure, what was that? Okay, so the first section was the first chapter. You'll see that these chapters kind of logically kind of follow of kind of the steps that kind of would occur when you're starting to think about employment, a career, and that sort of thing. And again, this is something that we'll use with every client to some degree, depending on what that individual needs, because we get some people that really know what they want, they've got their act together, they know where to get it, and they don't really need to kind of start from ground zero Yeah, because some people just need to be motivated to do this, you know. So this first actual, so this first chapter is called Motivation to Work. So there's going to be materials in here that we can pull from. So of course it has an introduction just for anyone who just kind of starts peeking into this chapter. So there's an employment worksheet, and I think what that has to do with just, again, the kinds of real, why people work. So these are going to be super basic, and again, depending on who the person is as to what you're going to use. So there's a, like, benefits planning. There's a sheet here just deals with benefits planning. Then role modeling and peer connection, of course, that's going to be big. So a lot of times is to, you know, get it from another blind person as to, you know, why they're working and how they went about doing it, that sort of thing. Because a lot of times, you know, a new person won't necessarily listen to the counselor. They'll listen to another blind person more strongly. So anyway, so here's another. So again, here's another counseling tool document we can pull from. Prioritizing, you know, again, this kind of things, how you prioritize the things in your life. Social skills, again, I'm pretty sure that's got to be a document that talks about social skills, and there's probably, as I recall, like a checklist there on just things you need to kind of know. Community resources. In fact, at the end of the volume, there's going to be a section on community resources and internet resources. So at the end of each one of these chapters, we originally kind of had a document in each one, but then we realized that, hey, there's a lot of repeat here. So we're actually putting the community resources and internet resources at the end of this volume, you know, at the end of it. So here's the second chapter of skills to work and to live independently, because you got to have some certain basic skills to be able to, you know, to go to work, to go to school, to go to work, or to live independently. So this chapter will address those, because that's an introduction. An alternative skills inventory. Again, there are just some general things there that we'll go down through on this particular checklist to make sure that, so the help the person can make sure that they have. Because a lot of this is, you know, for the counselor to know, but it's also, there are things that, of course, the client needs to know. So some of these tools, materials, will actually be handed to the client themselves and to help them to realize, do they have this or do they not have that? Because, again, this is for the client, but it's, okay, a lot of times tools for the counselor to use on the client or the client to use on themselves. A parent skill, so of course, you know, parents to find a job, that's important. Accommodations that you might need to go to work, like babysitting or special transportation, the whole thing, that's a document dealing with it. Volunteerism and work experience, because that's sometimes is a beginning point to find out kind of what you want to do and where to find it, and just to ease yourself into work itself. That's a whole section dealing with volunteer work. So technology, now again, if you need to work, there's some technology you might need, that's just, you know, how to get it from us or where to get it, you know, that sort of thing. We'll have some documents in here that are kind of written by other blind people about working. This one's called, it's an open letter to a blind person. So it's again it's a really nifty letter that was written by a blind guy about, you know, why work as a blind person? Why would you want to work? Okay, so here's the third chapter. It has to do with values and interests and skills. So it has the chapter whole dealing with it. Evaluate your own skills and interests and values, because that will help direct you, of course, towards the type of career that will suit you and those very important elements of yourself. So of course, it starts out with an introduction. It's a value inventory, interest inventory, skill inventory. Okay, now we're to the next chapter. So, choosing a career goal. An introduction, of course. So, here's all about job shadowing and informational interviews. Again, how to do it, why to do it. Career information resources, where do you find things about different careers? Some labor analysis. I think some things from the government, kind of trends and things about the labor market. Self-employment process, because, you know, some of our folks want to work for themselves. They want to be the boss of their own business. Scheduling appointments, how to get into the federal government through program they have called Schedule A. So we've had several clients that have used that here. And here's about the BEP program, the bending, program, so information about it. Supported employment, we have some clients that are multi-handicapped that need some kind of ongoing supports as they go to work, so it's about that. Transition services, about, working with teenage kids, helping them start getting into thinking about careers and learning about careers. Okay, I'm sure that whatever wage is all that. Okay, now here's one, a chapter called Where to Work and Why. Of course, the introduction. Relocation, just sometimes you're going to have to move to be able to get to where the job's at. Networking, again, just all about, getting to know other people and know people so that you can learn about things, maybe have some ins when it comes time to find a job, just open the whole idea. Heads up.
That's it, Bob, you're done.
Quiet now.
How much further do you need to go?
Well, I'll quit some of the talking about the various little article or tools or actual articles, whatever it is. I'll just tell you what the rest of the chapters are.
Okay.
Job seeking skills, be number 6. If I make this live, just hit the whole darn thing.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, just keep going. I'll make it live. So it has to be done. So here's what I call, what does the employer expect? And the one after this is having to deal with rejection, because I worked on those. And then another one is how to deal with success, because surprisingly, that can be tough for some people. Then here's what we call employer information. It's, I got just some things about employers in general. I think there's one more section. And then the very last section is the materials and resources. Again, just where do you can find some additional information that we didn't have in the manual. So again, it's something that every council will have, and it'll be some things we'll hand out to clients, and it's gonna be good. It will be all there. There's really good stuff there. So.
Yes, there is. Thank you for sharing it with us. And when do you expect it to be?
Totally completed in January. It's half finished now, so we'll get everyone the first part of it, because we're just excited enough about it, people want it. So we're gonna give them the first half here in December, and the second half will come in January.
So once those CDs are produced, can the board get?
I'm sure if that's, why not?
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Rule is illegal or not.
Yeah, before we get rule in place.
Robert, I have a question for you. Someplace along the line you said something about job shadowing, and I was kind of, that was a fascinating term to me, and I wondered exactly what that meant.
Well, there might be someone who is interested in doing transcription work for medical, whatever, and we might have them come over and spend the day with you.
Okay.
Kind of in a sense, be your shadow, watch what you do.
Oh, okay, so it's other blind people that have these jobs or formerly have these jobs that you can hook up with somebody that might be interested, so they could fill them in. That, well, this is wonderful, but this could be a headache or whatever. What they can expect if they really were interested. Okay.
Yeah, I'll shout out another blind person or just anyone.
Okay, that sounds terrific.
Okay.
Yeah, because it isn't always another blind person. It may be just someone who does that job. Yeah. So that a blind person can see, okay, what is it that I need to know in order to do this? Do I really want to be a whatever?
Yeah.
And they do that a lot in schools, too. They'll have kids do it. I think it's a wonderful tool, because some people, think in their glamour thought that they want to be a veterinarian, for instance, and if they go and see what a veterinarian really does, it may or may not stick that they really want to do that.
And they may be a city person, and when they really get down to the nitty gritty, they realize that, oh yes, I don't think so.
Yeah, it stinks in here, that kind of thing.
when the manual's complete, we'll make sure that everyone has it, all the board has their own CD.
I think that's a wonderful thing they do.
This is Amy, you know, one thing that we said to our staff, and I don't remember if Robert said this or not, but as a committee, I mean, this is only meant to be just a springboard or to jump off of, really, you know, because there are so many more resources and so much more information. I mean, we could have made this manual 10 times the size of what it is now. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of a basic nuts and bolts thing, and people can add to it as they.
Oh, I think it's
so. Who is the staff on the placement